LD, aka the independent variable.
Trap God, I was serving out the whole world. Hey, where the gold at, baby? Where the clothes at, baby? Where the dough at, baby? In the bank, you know I ain't trying to blow that, baby.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 4 of the Spider Scoop podcast. Got a very special episode today featuring Petey Buckets. He's an expert on all things George Mason basketball and A-10 basketball. And we've also, of course, got star center for the Richmond Spiders, Grant Golden. We're going to put the Grant Golden interview up first, and then we'll go PD next, and then we're going to wrap it up with about 30 minutes of me and Austin chopping it up about, you know, Richmond's schedule looking ahead, at-large consideration, and, of course, recapping Saturday's big one against VCU. So make sure to give it a listen, and we hope you enjoy. 13, I wear the same pair of jeans every day. Free sandwiches, homie, 2 steps away. We got a very special guest on the podcast today. He's your A-10 Player of the Week. Just led Richmond to a huge win on Saturday, Grant Golden. Grant, what's going on, my man?
Not much. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Feeling pretty good after this weekend?
No doubt. It was a big win for us. Lots of guys played well. And just to go out there and win against a rival like that is always big.
So would you say, when I was watching this game, you know, you guys open up, you get the first bucket, and then Nick scores 9 straight, hits 9 threes, you know, he's holding his wrist up. That looked like the most fun. You guys have had good wins this year. That was the most fun you guys have had playing a game.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, you know, whenever you play your crosstown rival, everything's just amplified. Lots of, you know, adrenaline, everything, lots of energy in the gym. So to come out and have Nick start the game out like that is huge. Obviously, threes and dunks are the biggest momentum plays, especially in games like that. So to have threes like that and just get the crowd into it early on was big, and just kept going from there.
Do you think it was especially big for Nick too, especially, you know, where he was a guy that really struggled in that first game to then come out and really dominate in this one?
Yeah, for sure. He had been struggling shooting the ball the last couple games too, and for him to just come out and get that first one to go down and then back it up with 2 more, I mean, it was huge for his confidence, and I hadn't seen him play with that much confidence in the last couple weeks, so it was big for him.
So you touched on confidence. Where is this team's confidence level at right now?
I think we have a lot of confidence, you know. I think we've played really good basketball here recently. Obviously, having Blake back is a big help for us. But, you know, we're just trying to take it one game at a time. We got 6 games left, and all these teams are good. They're all going to be good games, so just trying to take it one game at a time and go from there.
So we'll get into the numbers a little bit in a minute, but when we look back at Saturday, you know, Dayton obviously was a great atmosphere. This game, I think, was probably one of the loudest we've heard the Robin Center in a while. You know, how much of a difference does that make it for you guys when you just have the crowd into it, when you have the energy going? Do you guys really feed off of that?
Yeah, for sure. It's huge. You know, just to have, especially the student section there, supporting and in full force like that, it really just gives us a lot of energy. And like you said, we just feed off it, and it means a lot to us for sure.
Mm-hmm. So Coach Mooney said to make sure that, you know, it was great to have that. But on Wednesday, you know, he doesn't want it to be a letdown game. You know, people need to be out there Wednesday. How important is it for even for you guys, you know? Cause we, you know, we've seen teams be susceptible where, you know, like a Fordham comes in or something like that, a LaSalle comes in, and you can kind of, you know, you go in, you expect to win that game, and you don't have the energy up. Just like that, you're in a 4-point game.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, it would be great if we could get a big crowd out there on Wednesday. And like you said, like we just said, you know, we feed off of that. But regardless, you know, we're going to come out ready to play. George Mason's a really good team, and we've struggled with them, especially at our place over the last couple years. So, you know, we need to be ready to play. And, yeah, hopefully we'll be ready to go.
So diving
in. So, Grant, kind of.
Yeah, go ahead, Austin.
Kind of banking off the atmosphere question. Obviously, it shows everybody feeds off of it. But what warrants the signature Grant Golden flex during the game?
I don't know. It's just a feel thing, man. Whatever, you know, big play. I think I gave it after and one. I felt like we were on a pretty big run there. So just when I get a little excited.
So looking at this game, what did you guys see differently, particularly defensively, but really just in general from the Rams and this one versus the last one? Because it feels like last time there was a lot of, they're just swarming you guys in the perimeter. Seems like mm-hmm. They didn't do that as much this time.
Yeah. You know, I think offensively speaking, you know, they sent the double team early when I was catching it in the posts. So we were able to throw it out of there, and Nick got a couple wide open threes at the beginning and all night, really. So I think we did a good job. I think our ball movement was way better compared to the first time we played them. Defensively, I thought we played pretty well defensively in the first game. I thought that they made a lot of tough shots, especially the freshman Bones, hit some really, really tough threes that you sort of just have to live with. I mean, step back threes with a guy in your face, that's tough for anybody. But just overall, I think we did a good job on hedging the ball screens a lot better, sort of forcing those guys back towards half court coming off those ball screens. But overall, we did a really good job on the defensive end.
So kind of touching on that, you specifically, I think that in terms of this team's transformation, obviously, you know, you have the switch from man-to-man, but for you personally, I think that a lot of people look at this team and said a lot of the defense does start in the interior. You guys did struggle last year giving up offensive rebounds, working the defensive interior. And you're a guy that's gone from a 108 defensive rating last season in conference to 90.8. So I know you've made changes in the offseason. You've lost weight. What have you done differently personally that you've just been so much better defensively?
I think the biggest thing helping me is just I've played a lot less minutes this year. I think with injuries and everything that happened last year and just how much we relied on me and Gilly at times, we had to do so much on the offensive end that we were just gassed during games. But now we have the depth. We have Blake out there. Nick's back out there. We have guys coming off the bench getting rotated in. So just everybody's getting more breaks, and we can just put more energy and more effort into the defensive end because we're just not as tired this year. So that's a testament to, you know, obviously Blake and Nick being back and the guys coming off the bench doing a great job for us this year.
Do you think for you personally that the man-to-man has worked a lot better?
Yeah, for sure. I think we've done a pretty good job of it, a pretty good transition switching over from the matchup zone. And I think, you know, we've done a really good job here in the last month or so of really growing. I think the bigs have done a great job on the ball screens. I think we've done a great job on ball screening defense in general all around in terms of rotation and stuff like that. So overall, it's been a good transition.
So Coach Mooney said to you guys in the locker room after the game, you know, this is a great win, great energy, you want to keep this going, but don't let this be the signature win. It's, you know, it's only February. You guys look at the conference tournament, maybe March Madness. How important is that to not make this the biggest moment of the year?
Yeah, I mean, that says it all right there. You know, the biggest game now is on Wednesday. That game doesn't mean anything at this point. We were lucky and good enough to get it, but we got to move on. Like I said, it's one game at a time now. We got six games here. All six of those games are going to be really good games, and we got to try and get as many of them as we can. So we're just going to take it one game at a time, and it all starts on Wednesday.
So keeping it one game at a time, obviously you guys have been much better defensively, as we've said, number two in the conference in defensive efficiency, but particularly these last four or five games, four games in a row, held opponents under 60 points. What have you guys done differently, even just within that small span, and how do you guys now stay consistent with it? Because we've seen earlier in conference play and non-conference where there are flashes. You had those great dominant defensive games, but then the next game you let up 70, 80 points. What do you have to do over these last six games to keep that going?
I think the biggest thing, you know, like I said, I think our ball screen defense overall has just been way better from everybody, and that's helped us out a lot. I also think it's a huge testament to our coaches. You know, we're starting to play teams for the second time now and stuff like that. So the adjustments that we've made and sort of the things that they've picked up on here as we've played teams a second time has been really good. And it's also a testament to our guys locking in on the scout and making sure we know tendencies and what guys are trying to do. And I think, like you said, we've done a really good job of that here recently, and hopefully we can keep it up.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are 200th in the country in terms of experience. You're a team where you start all juniors, but still a pretty young team. We've seen guys like a Tyler Burton, where he's obviously shown an incredible athleticism, a great rebounding ability, great defensive ability, but, you know, he's had to progress in terms of that offensive comfort learning the system. And we started to see that come a little bit more. So you have him coming along. Blake's now back in the lineup. Where do you guys think you're at in terms of, like, percentage of where this team's chemistry's at, figuring it out, being where you guys need to be?
Yeah, I think it's getting there. I think, like you said, having guys like Tyler Burton, who is doing so many things well for us as a freshman, things that a lot of freshmen aren't capable of doing, that helps a lot, just getting guys rest and getting guys in and out. You know, Nate's made huge strides this year in terms of what he's doing. So I think our chemistry is really good. It's getting there, but everything's a work in progress, and then we got a lot of basketball left. So hopefully just keep growing on that and keep improving on that, and hopefully it'll help us out here towards the end.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at your expectations heading the season, you know, everyone thought you guys obviously were going to improve this year. You had more experience coming in, but you know, most people were kind of picking you guys seventh in the conference, some six, some maybe even as high as five. I think a lot of people were really putting that ceiling at, you know, that five range area. Mm-hmm. Now you're the third seed. You have head-to-head over Rhode Island in second, so there's a reasonable, legit chance you guys could get the second seed. When you look back in September, you guys obviously felt optimistic, but if you go back to September and someone says, Grant, you guys are going to be third in contention for second in the conference, what do you say to that?
I would have agreed with them. You know, I don't like to think about stuff like that, or I would never, you know, come out and say something like that at that point in time, because we have to put the work in and we have to prove it. But I knew what this team was capable of. I thought we had a really good offseason, a really good summer. And like I said, just bringing everybody back and adding Blake and Nick coming off of injury, we obviously had a lot of talent. So I knew that we were capable of doing it. And so far we've proved it when we've done a good job. And hopefully we can finish out the regular season strong and going into postseason play. Mm.
So you hit about Blake coming back there. And Saturday, you know, he didn't have his best shooting game, but it still felt like his impact, you could really feel it. And one of the things I think about, one of the biggest differences between your first game against VCU and this game, is that not only, you know, the reason VCU could really swarm them on the perimeter is that when you take away Nick and you take away Gilly, you know, there are not a lot of other shooters out there. Even if Blake's not shooting well, you still have to defend him. He's still a threat, which opens up so much more for everybody else. How big is his impact just having him back out there, even if he's not playing well?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, he's a big offensive threat, like you said. So regardless of whether he's shooting the ball or not, you have to respect him and what he's capable of. So obviously spreads the floor for everybody. It helps me out a lot. Keeps, you know, prevents guys from digging in as much or sending double teams. And it's just overall better for our team. And then, like you said, you know, he didn't shoot the ball great against VCU, but his impact was definitely felt on the defensive end. And that's just something that he's brought for us all year. You know, plays really hard on defense, and is definitely an energy on defense that we haven't had the last couple years, and it's been big for us.
Mm-hmm. So was there a moment this year, whether it was Saturday night, could have been the Rhode Island game, where you guys sat down and you said, okay, we're a good team, but this year could be really special. There's something we could do, whether it's going to the tournament, winning the A-10. Like, was there a moment where just, like, just something felt different?
I wouldn't say there was a moment, and I don't think, you know, anybody really thought of it like that, or we sat down and said anything. But I think, you know, going to Rhode Island to open up conference play and winning that game on the road was huge. And the coaches sort of came in the locker room, and usually we jump around and stuff after a big win and celebrate, and we didn't. And Coach Mooney said something, and he said something like, thought you guys would be more excited or something. Gilly said, we expect to do stuff like this now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think just getting that first win and realizing that we're capable of winning those kind of big games was a big moment for us, and hopefully we can get a couple more big ones here to end the season.
So you guys had another big moment Saturday that probably went a little less, a little more under the radar. Andre Weir, I don't know if you got to see, committed. Have you got a chance to see any of his tape or anything?
Yeah. I've seen a couple videos on him, and he came on his visit, and I got to spend some time with him. He's a really good kid, so we're excited about him.
So how much is that a guy you could see having an impact next year?
I mean, yeah, for sure. Obviously, you never know with a freshman, but he's a big body. From what I've seen in terms of the video and stuff like that, he moves really well for his size. So we'll see. But, you know, I think if he comes in and works hard, he'll definitely have a chance to try and get some minutes next year.
So being a big guy yourself, what would your piece of advice be to him coming in next year?
The biggest thing I think for a freshman, and a lot of this is going to be on me, is just getting as much help as you can from the guy in front of you. I think when I first got here as a freshman, I didn't go to TJ enough. I should have gone to TJ Klein more. And then sort of as the year went on, especially when I wasn't playing and stuff and I had more time to work out on my own and sort of sit there and watch practice, just being able to watch him and ask him questions and stuff about the offense and the defense and all that was really helpful for me. So just trying to learn from the older guys is probably the biggest thing for any freshman.
Mm-hmm. So how important is that, as you said, as a freshman, to be able to come in? And, you know, we see other guys in the conference, like, you know, some guys can thrive in a role like Trey Mitchell that come in as a freshman and just absolutely take over. But how, you know, you look at a guy like Tyler on this team, how big is it? You know, a lot of people have said fans are like, we want Tyler getting 20, 25 minutes a game. But mm-hmm. I think there's a legitimate reason to playing him 10 to 15 is being able to learn from a guy like you, be able to get that sense of comfort. How big is it for those guys and for Andre coming in next year to get to play under you?
Yeah, for sure. It's huge. You know, you sort of talk about Tyler. You know, Tyler's a really good player, like I said. And he's doing some things that all of us couldn't even imagine doing as freshmen. And he's got Nate in front of him. And Nate's an outstanding player as well. So I think it's just a huge testament to our depth here so far. And we're going to have that next year as well. So it's just big for those guys. I think it really helps in terms of especially the offense because our offense is so complex. There's lots of different things that you have to learn and do things a certain way. So just to have that experience and guys helping out younger guys on the team is huge for us. Mm.
So one thing that I've talked about with Austin on the podcast and before is I looked at like that the first VCU game. Looked at your stat line, you had, I want to say, 24 points. I think you only had 2 assists or something in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I've said I've been a big proponent. I think the Spiders are at their best not when Grant is giving you 25, 30 a game and 2 assists. I think you guys are at your best when 15, 6, 10 rebounds, 1 turnover. What kind of game do you feel like you need to have when the Spiders are going at their best?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think it's definitely a game like Saturday's is definitely probably I think you're right. Definitely when we're at our best. But I think this team, because we have so many guys and so much experience, I think it's just whoever's night it is, you know. Mm-hmm. Nick goes 0-for-9 at Fordham. Gilly has 23 or whatever it is that night. You know, Gilly has 10 points or whatever. Nick has 23 against VCU. Blake has his night. I have my night. Nate coming in with 21 points or whatever it was at Rhode Island. We just have so many guys that are capable of having big nights that I don't think it's really, you know, we need certain things from this guy. We just need someone to be on, and we need everybody catering to that and sort of just building off of whoever's on that night and just keep it rolling.
How extra important is that, having so many options, especially when you look at the postseason?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge, you know, especially once you get deep into conference play and in postseason and you've seen guys a couple times, scouting reports, you know, they change, they make adjustments. So the fact that we have that many threats on the offensive end and that many things that other teams have to try and go over and stop, it's big for us.
Mm-hmm. So entering this year, I think that this was a team that obviously, you know, we don't want to go back on it, but it is the anniversary of the Fire Mooney mm-hmm. Mafia billboard or whatever. You know, fans 2 years before, you know, not having great seasons. This was a year where mm-hmm. people were mad. There was a lot of outside noise. Do you feel like you guys are really hitting that point where you're just kind of shutting everybody up?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really going to say too much about it because I thought, obviously, we found it all very disrespectful, mm-hmm. especially to Coach Mooney. Regardless of what anybody thinks about basketball and our team, he is an outstanding man that has done a lot for a lot of guys over the years. And he's done a lot for the guys on our team now. So just to go and do something like that on a billboard was seriously disheartening, to say the least. But, you know, it is what it is. I know he doesn't care about it because all he cares about is the guys in our locker room. We didn't care about it, and we wanted to go out there and prove people wrong this year. And I think that's what we've done so far. Hopefully we can keep that up, like I said. And hopefully some of these people that, you know, are – Coach Mooney haters or whatever you want to call them will actually come out and support instead of being stubborn and staying at home because they dislike our coach or whatever reason. Mm-hmm. We're 19-6 right now. I don't think any fan has any reason to be complaining. We have guys out there playing their hearts out every night, fighting through injuries, stuff like that. So I it really doesn't make any sense to me, but I also want to say that I do appreciate the fans that do come out and have supported us through those tough times and those 2 tough years. And that means a lot to us for sure.
Yeah, and I think you said, you know, you're 19-6 this year, just went through 2 tough years. And I think that obviously, you know, you don't want to overlook this year because this is a year where you guys do have a special team and can make some noise. But in the back of your mind, you've got to be thinking, you know, this entire team's returning next year. Mm-hmm. Connor's coming in, Isaiah's coming in, Andre's coming in. How exciting is it to know that with every bit of success you have, every bit you get better this year, it's only going to be better next year?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's exciting. Like I said, I don't think we talk about it too much, obviously, because we're just focused on this season and we want to finish out strong. But, you know, it is an exciting thing to think about when you look around the locker room and realize that everybody's going to be back next year. So we're excited for it. I hope, you know, the fans and everybody else are excited for it. And I think it'll be a really, really good year next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really, really liked your comment on the Fire Moody Mafia. Thought you hit the nail on the head there. But we're mid-February. Bubble talk is kind of all the buzz around college basketball right now.
Mm-hmm.
Richmond, obviously, sitting there on the bubble. And also Butler, where your brother's playing, they're also sitting on the bubble. If it's a long shot, but if it were to happen, we have a Richmond-Butler matchup in the tournament, what could we as fans expect to see out of both y'all in that game?
Fireworks. maybe a technical or two. But he's probably just as crazy as I am. But no, it would be fun. Obviously, like you said, it's a long shot. But if that were to ever happen, I know that would obviously mean a lot to me, to him, to my mom, everybody. And it would be really cool. But regardless, you know, I'm hoping those guys are going to slide into the tournament here and make some noise because they got a good team up there. And I've been really proud of him and the way they've been playing. And they're having a good year, and hopefully they can keep it rolling.
I think I said something to you last spring, but have you ever gone up to Mooney and talked about, hey, like, non-conference game?
We've thrown it out there. There's been talks. I know Coach Jenkins told me the other day that he was going to text him again. I think we tried last year, but schedules were already full. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try again one last time before I get out of here. So we'll see.
So confirmed, heard it here first, Richmond actively trying to schedule Butler for next year. Breaking news, nothing else on this pod. That's pretty much it for me. Austin, you got anything else?
Yeah, man, I appreciate your time, Grant.
No, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, best of luck the rest of the way, man.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you. Got a very special guest on today. You know him from Twitter at PD Buckets. He's on the Hey 10 podcast. He's on the By George podcast. Knows all things A10 George Mason. PD, what's going on, my man?
Hey Noah, thanks for having me on, man. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. A little bit of a rough patch, some technical difficulties, but we got through it. So to start out, first, just give us a quick rundown for the casual, you know, Richmond fan who maybe watches the team, maybe saw the last game against George Mason. You know, they looked. Saw George Mason maybe did pretty well in the non-conference, doesn't follow the league. You know, give him a little rundown about where this team's at.
Where this team's at, riding a little bit of a roller coaster right now. So you mentioned the hot non-conference start. We were 11-1 at one point with no really good wins, but the only loss was to Maryland. And obviously Maryland's a top 10 team this season. Since then we've hit a rough patch. We lost to TCU by, I think, 30 or 40 points to end the non-conference. And then I think we started 3-9 in conference play with some bad losses and more than just, you know, not really more than the bad losses. I think the concern is just that we haven't really looked even very competitive in some of these games. So, you know, St. Bonaventure, I think, beat us by 20 in the second half when we kicked off conference play. We've lost twice to GW. You know, we lost by 15 to Davidson, 14 to Rhode Island. So, 10 to Richmond. So in conference play, the concern is that we haven't really even been, competitive in a lot of these games that we've lost. So Mason stands at 3-9 in conference at this point. Almost definitely looking like we're going to play in the Wednesday night pillow fight, which I just would have thought was unimaginable after the 11-1 start.
Well, it's no longer the Wednesday night pillow fight, because if I'm correct, it's afternoon games this year, isn't it?
It's always going to be the Wednesday night pillow fight, and I will fight anybody who wants to change it.
With a pillow or without a pillow. So you guys, as you said, you know, there have been a lot of games where they haven't been competitive, losing to tough teams, you know, lost to George Washington twice, but you guys helped the Spiders out a little. I guess depends how you look at it, but beat VCU in the Siegel Center last Wednesday, but then follow that up with a home loss to George Washington on Star Wars night, no less. What do you say about this team's, whether it's their inconsistency, volatility, or do you more just chalk that up to VCU really just sputtering lately?
It's a good question, because I think if you saw the VCU-Mason game, VCU just looked absolutely flat the entire time. I don't exactly know what's going on there, but I think that VCU, they took a small lead into halftime. There was some back and forth to start the second half, and then if I'm remembering correctly, they took the lead at like 43-41 or something like that, and I think that they sort of got to a point where they figured the game was in hand and they could coast a little bit, and they didn't seem to be playing with a lot of energy or a lot of intensity. And then Mason actually went on a 16-0 run, 17-0 run at one point in the second half. And then there was your ball game. VCU battled back and made it kind of close at the end. But I was kind of shocked by what we saw at VCU. And then I think the fact that we followed it up with that bad loss that you just mentioned at home to GW makes me think that this Mason team hasn't exactly turned a corner the way that we were hoping they had.
So when we look at the difference between, you know, this game between the Spiders and the Patriots versus last game, there's quite a few differences. I think that obviously, you know, Blake Francis was not in that game. He's now back in this one. So not only do you have that addition both offensively, but the Spiders defense have in four straight games held opponents to under 60 points. So when I go and I look at this game, Javon Green last time has 39 points, 5 of 10 from deep. And when I look at the Patriots, they're fourth in the conference in offensive rebounding percentage. In that game, A.J. Wilson didn't have a single offensive rebound. Against VCU, he had 5. They beat VCU. So I don't feel like, especially with Blake back, I don't feel like this is going to be a game that Mason's going to score 87 points on the Spiders and then also lose. I don't see them putting up that many points. And I also see whether or not if they want to be competitive, but even if they aren't, I feel like it's going to be a game where they're going to need some more interior play, some work on the offensive glass from Wilson, some post work defensively.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good evaluation. And one thing about AJ Wilson is that he actually rolled his ankle at the end of the first half against GW, which was something else that hurt us, because we took a lead into halftime at GW. But AJ is so important in the way that he protects the paint, protects the rim for us. When he doesn't have that explosiveness, he's one of the most athletic dudes in the A-10. And when he doesn't have that explosiveness, he just can't really be himself. So that's definitely something that Mason fans are going to be keeping an eye on, is whether or not he's going to be able to be that paint protector, be that rim protector that we need him to be. Because you're absolutely right. He's been crushing it. His offensive rebounding has been really vital to a Mason team that struggles to score points. If you are a Richmond fan and you only saw if you've only seen George Mason play in that first Richmond game where we put up 87, you might think that our offense is a lot better than it actually is. But this has been an offensively challenged team all season, and that was actually one of the best performances we've had all year.
So would you agree it's safe to say this will not be nearly as high scoring? I'd probably say on either side, high scoring of an affair.
Yeah, I think so. So Mason put up about 1.16 points per possession looking at the KenPom. Javon scored 39 points, absolutely out of his mind. I think that they're probably going to draw something up defensively, the Spartans are, in order to prevent him from doing that again, because I think he just had much too easy a time getting to the rim. He was 10 for 12 from 2. So, and if you watch the game, he was just getting to the rim over and over, hitting those nice, easy close shots. And I don't think Richmond's going to let him do that again.
So if you had to put a score prediction on this one, what are you going with?
Oh, geez, a score prediction. Yeah, I'm not feeling terribly confident about my Patriots. I'd say maybe something like probably, I don't know, 85-68 Richmond, something like that.
Awesome.
And PD, kind of bouncing off of A.J. Wilson, I didn't get to watch the games, and I saw that he did come back. Did it appear to be anything lingering around after the injury, or did he kind of get back to semi-full strength? Can you kind of talk on that for us?
Yeah, so I just don't think he looked at 100%. So I know he was out there and he was playing, but I think that I wish I had the breakouts in front of me. But if you watch the first half there, I think that he had probably 4 or 5 blocks just in the first half alone. I don't think he had a single one in the second half. And I think that the way that GW was able to, we couldn't get any stops down the stretch in the second half to sort of summarize the problems and why we ultimately lost. We were, every time we got a big bucket and, trimmed the lead down to 4 or whatever and felt like we were getting back in it, they would respond. Potter kept getting to the rim. He's a really good player for them, but they were able to do some things that they weren't able to do in the first half because of the way that I think AJ just wasn't able to, he wasn't really able to be himself, and he finished the game with 1 defensive rebound, which I think is another thing that that hurt us a little bit.
So moving on to it, because you're an A-10 guy, obviously, you got the A-10 podcast. So looking at the league as a whole, when you look at the Spiders, you look at they've got a couple quad one wins. You know, they beat Wisconsin. They got, so when you look at this team, they don't have a lot of, they really don't have any resume building games left on the schedule. This VCU game is a huge momentum builder for them, but VCU's kind of sputtering. Lenardi has them in the next four out. Do they, in your opinion, have a resume that puts them in at-large contention still?
Contention, yes. I think that they're probably on the wrong side of the bubble at this point, but I think that they've got a chance for some good wins with, you know, Bonaventure on the road. If they can pull that one off, that should be a quad two win. Mm-hmm. They get Davidson at home. They get Duquesne away. Those are both quad two games, and I think if they can win two or three of those, then I think they'll be in a good spot. So they've got the one bad loss to Radford, which is, you know, it's not, I think it's not the worst loss in the world. Bradford's a pretty good mid-major, but it's still not the sort of thing that you want on your resume. All the other losses are defensible, though. Every other team's in the top 100 KenPom. So, you know, I think that they've got a chance to play their way into the tournament. And, of course, depends on how they finish down the stretch. But if they can get to 14-4 in conference and they can win a couple games in Brooklyn, then I think that they're in.
Now, do you think the A-10 can be a three-bid league this year? And kind of follow-up, can they be a three-bid league with the Spiders not making the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a scenario where if, you know, I think Rhode Island's in at this point. Dayton's comfortably in, and I think Rhode Island's in. So I think the question is whether VCU or Richmond is able to get in. And I think, I think we tend to overreact to losses in season. VCU looks terrible right now. They did not look good against Mason. They just got waxed by Richmond. But if they come out and they're able to beat Dayton on their home court on Tuesday, I think the game is, whenever that game's played, if they beat Dayton on their home court, then I think they're right back in the conversation.
Yeah. So I've got a kind of interesting question for you. I got four A-10 storylines here, and I want you to rank them in terms of most surprising to least surprising. Dayton reached, this is from a perspective, you know, entering the year before we knew any of this happened. Dayton reaching number six in the AP polls. The Spiders going from a Wednesday Brooklyn team to a double by front runner. Davidson's underwhelming season, or VCU's fall from a top 25 team to a Lenardi next four out.
Okay, so I'm ranking these from most surprising to least surprising.
Yep.
So that's a good question. I think I'll start with number four. I think the least surprising is Richmond.
Okay.
Being in the in double by contention, I think that was something that we actually talked about preseason on the podcast. Grant for Hey 10, people don't listen to Hey 10. It's me and Grant Lebeds. Grant actually went so far as to say this was one of the most talented starting fives in the league, and we knew that Chris Mooney's offense needs bucket getters, and with Blake Francis coming in, returning all the important players from last year, we knew that you'd have a lot of guys who could score really well, and that was going to make Richmond a tough out. So I think that's definitely the least surprising overall. Second, I think the other one, I would probably go Davidson. I'm sort of jumping around here, but let's say Dayton top 10 is definitely the most surprising.
Okay.
I think that even if you thought Dayton was going to be amazing, you probably never saw them as a top 10 team. You probably had them capped around a top 20-ish team. But teams in the A-10 just don't, you know, they don't really fly as high as Dayton has been all season. And then I think probably second most surprising would be VCU's fall from grace at the moment. They were just rolling at the end of last year, and that would have been, you know, they're returning just about everybody who got big minutes for them. It's just really surprising that they just haven't clicked for whatever reason, really at any point this season. And then third would be Davidson. Looking back on it, we probably should have realized that they were going to have some struggles because of their lack of athleticism, the lack of the supporting cast, and the fact that the rest of the A-10 was going to get better around them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think kind of going along with your VCU point, too, is that not only is it surprising, you know, how they've fallen from grace, but also I think with that has gone the Marcus Evans. I think that he's been, as his season has disappointed, VCU's kind of fallen along with that.
Yep.
So the kind of last one from me would be, so as an outsider, you're a fan of the A-10, you follow the league, you follow the Spiders, but you're not, you know, you're not rooting for them. when you look at Richmond, you look at the past couple seasons, the way they've gone, you look at, you know, the billboard, you look at all of that, and entering the season, right? So they were double, they were a Wednesday team last year. Entering the season, you know, people had them picked, you know, kind of the sixth, fifth range. I think most people were kind of putting their floor at the seven seed, putting the ceiling around the four seed. Now they've got, you know, they're in third right now. There's a chance they could get to that second seed. Probably not, because Rhode Island's, I don't see them losing two games down the stretch, but it's possible. So you look at expectations of this year. What did you see entering the year? What did Richmond need to do to consider this season a success, and have they accomplished that?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say that, you know, if we're talking from the perspective of the people who put up the billboard, the Fire Mooney Mafia there, you know, they're not going to settle for anything less than a tournament appearance, and I think that's very much up in the air. I think from just about every other perspective, I think this season has been a success because you are returning everybody next year, of course, barring transfers, but your starting lineup, I believe, is all juniors at this point. Everybody that you bring off the bench is either a freshman or a sophomore. So I think that from that perspective, you have just so much to build on from this season. And I think next season, you'll be able to put together an out-of-conference schedule that puts you squarely in contention for an at-large bid. And I think that'll help you, I think from any reasonable perspective, I mean, I think that's you have to consider that a success.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, as you said, the perspective from the Fire, you know, Mooney Mafia guys, is going to be a lot different for everyone else. But when you have to look at it, this team was pegged to get, you know, to finish sixth in the conference, and they're now on, you know, tournament consideration. And you look at this team, and as you said, you know, they're returning everyone next year. They're adding a transfer in Connor Crabtree, and their highest rated recruit, Isaiah Wilson. So I think this year has certainly been a success. What about you, Austin?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think Petey hit the nail on the head. Yeah, the Fire Mooney Mafia. I haven't seen them tweet in a while, actually. But, which is kind of funny. But, tournament or bust for them. But the building for next year is what really excites me with Mooney squad right now. With starting five of all juniors, there's nothing to not be excited about, especially with the success that they've done this year. So, PD, one more thing for me. Y'all have six games left on the conference schedule. You got Richmond, St. Joe's, Dayton, Duquesne, SLU, and Fordham. What's your kind of gut, and where do you think George Mason's going to finish at the end of conference play?
Oh, geez. I see maybe two more wins on there, but I got to admit I'm terrified about that season-ending game at Fordham. KenPom has it as a two-point game. Mason doesn't do well with zone. Fordham plays that sort of wonky zone. So, you know, there's a chance, as much as I hate to say this, that Mason goes like 1-5 down the stretch. Which, you know, I would that would be awful. But, you know, I think that they're squarely between either 4-14 or 5-13 on the season.
So, Petey, thank you so much for coming on, my man. You can go follow him at Petey Buckets on Twitter. This is your time. Plug anything you want, any podcasts upcoming. Tell the people what you're doing.
Hey 10 Podcast with me and Grant Lebetz from A10 Talk. We've got some cool guests on. We've had Jill Lenardi come on recently, Chris DeSano from Rhode Island. We're talking to John Giannini and a few, so we're excited about that. Podcast is growing, reach is expanding, and we're having a lot of fun with it, so check it out.
Awesome. Definitely go do that, guys. Petey, thank you so much, my man.
Yeah, thanks,
all right, thanks a lot, fellas.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 4 of the Spider Scoop podcast, the most tremendous Richmond basketball podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Noah Goldberg with ESPN Richmond, joined by struggling Charlotte Hornets fan, but more importantly, he writes about the Spiders for A10 Talk, Austin Daisy. Austin, what's going on, my man?
Not much, Noah. How are you?
Not too bad. So how are we feeling about Saturday's win?
Man, I'm pumped up. So pumped up. Think I got myself the flu. Not sure that's really related at all. But, man, it was good to see us beat VCU. Well,
I think he gave it to my Latin professor, too, because she canceled class today, so I'm not too mad.
Now, what do you think about it?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, obviously it's a confidence booster for them, you know, getting revenge. They've lost three games in a row to VCU, so I think that's huge, the crosstown rivalry. But, I mean, obviously you got to look at this as in terms of at-large conversation. Not a lot of resume-building games left. St. Bonaventure's probably going to be a quad two game. At Duquesne, could become quad one. Right now, it's looking like it's probably going to be a quad two. So I think it was big for them to get this one. I think that it was huge for Nick to have a big game. He's been struggling a lot lately. You know, I do have a little concern because they did, you know, they shot 11 of 22, which was great from deep, but they just revitalized their shooting in a home game. So I would like to see them do it on the road a little bit, but I was really impressed on the interior. I thought they played great on the glass. 40 to 39, they out-rebounded VCU, and I think that, you know, Mike Rhodes talked a little bit after the game that 17 offensive rebounds is more a statement of how many shots VCU was missing, I think, rather than a testament to their just dominance on the offensive glass. So I think those numbers are skewed.
24-70.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's putrid. I mean, that's rec league level stuff.
Yeah.
So they were 4 of 21 from deep. Bones Highland was pretty much shut down this game after he tore Richmond apart. What do you see from Richmond shutting the outside shot down?
I think that speaks really high on the coaching staff and the fact on how much they game plan for this game and how they nailed the game plan right on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we all saw in the first game at the Siegel Center, I mean, Bones Highland was, he just went nuclear.
Yeah.
He went like 4 or 5. It just seemed like he didn't miss. I think it's 5 or 6 total from three.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like he didn't miss. And they just suffocated him on Saturday at the Robin Center. He really tried to throw shots up. He was rushing stuff, and he's a freshman. You're going to see stuff like that. So held him to just 1 of 5 from three.
Mm-hmm.
And only, yeah, just three, he only had the 3 points. So shutting him down is not only a big testament to our defense, but I would like to give a shout out to the coaching staff as well for
mm-hmm.
knowing. And Mooney had talked about post game about how they were alert to how good he was. So like, okay, we got to put somebody on him. We got to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And Francis did a great job of guarding him all night. And he didn't, what it's like, he wasn't even there. So hats off to the coaching staff.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was a big, I thought that was one of Mooney's best games we've seen in a while. I think that, you know, he's really big on Andre, and I'm high on Andre too. I think he's going to be a really good player. He's got all the tools, athleticism, length defensively, but I thought in the first game that he was actually going to be a good matchup because they obviously didn't have Blake, so Andre was primarily on Bones, and I thought that the length was going to work, but clearly it didn't because I don't think having the length to, I talked a little bit about this on the radio, but I think with Bones, the better way to defend him is with the quickness to disrupt him and make him take shots from spots he doesn't want to hit, rather than go at him with length and try to make the shot release hard on the closeout, because we've seen he has a ridiculous ability to get shots off in really tight windows. And like you said, I think the most forgotten story, I think I might have tweeted this out, I think the most forgotten story from this game is how great Blake Francis was. And quite honestly, this was such a great game for him because 4 of 14 from the field, 4 of 10 from deep, 4 turnovers, but it still felt like he had such a good impact on that game. He played phenomenal defense on Bones and whoever he was matched up with, and he created space for his teammates. And just having him out there, even if he's not hitting shots, does so much to open up for Nick, to open up for Gilly. So I was just blown away with what I saw from Blake.
Yeah, no, for sure. Especially to have a guy like Nick have the start like he did. Because he started off, hit what, his first four?
Three or
first
four, third? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was unconscious, and DC was like, okay, the first game, Nick didn't hit. He wasn't hitting anything, so I guess they had to shift their focus a little bit, but then they saw Sherrod was hitting. Blake went 4-10 from three, so when we have guys like Francis and Sherrod hitting, it's, I mean, there's just weapons all over the court. All five guys are going to be a weapon, because VCU can't just focus on one guy they need to stop, because if Sherrod's not hitting, it seems like somebody else is picking up the slack, such as Francis or vice versa. So it really shows how scary this Richmond team can be going down the stretch.
Yeah, and to kind of go back, I kind of forgot to say this, but I think that especially giving Mooney bonus points, I was really, really happy with the minutes he allotted tonight, particularly 840 to Andre. I know, as I was saying, he's been big on Andre, and again, I've been high on Andre, but I think when you just watch the way that first game went and then tonight, to be able to sit down and say, okay, you know, we like to be able to rest our guys. We are a deeper team this year. But he gave Gilly 40. He gave Blake 33. Nick 31. Grant played a touch under 30. Nate 27. Tyler had the most minutes off the bench, and he only played 12. So I really think, you know, we've called for it on the podcast for Tyler to play more. I actually don't love that Matt played 9 minutes. I thought he was getting absolutely bullied down there. But other than that, I really like that he rolled with the starters, and you can't, that's not sustainable. You can't do that every game. But in a game where you need to win, and when you look at the matchups, I thought that was a really smart play by the coaching staff.
And what a great way to shut up the Moody Mafia. I mean, it doesn't get much better than a win like that in dominant fashion. VCU did not lead for a single second, just complete domination. And kudos to you, Coach Moody.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at where we're at right now, Richmond is in the third seed, the third spot in the A-10 now that they beat VCU. Rhode Island in second place. They've got head-to-head on Rhode Island, I believe, one game back, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong. So Rhode
one
Island,
and a half.
One and a half games back. Okay. Yeah. So reasonable chance. Honestly, I mean, the three and the two don't really matter as long as you stay at that four seed and don't have to play Dayton in the semifinals. But you go back and look on the season. I had Richmond about fifth in the conference. I think most people were picking them around 5-6 or 6-7, but some people had them at 5-2. Where did you have this team finishing at the beginning of the year, and how reasonable of a chance would you have given them of being where they're at now?
Beginning of the year, I think I was kind of right in the middle of the pack with everybody else, coming off of a bad season. Obviously, everybody was expecting them to have a better year this year, but I don't think people thought a year early, because next year was supposed to be the year. But now that they're showing their signs of promise now, if you would have told me we'd be finishing second or third, it would have been believable, but I'd have been like, I don't know. But after watching them play and watching them develop throughout this year, I mean, it doesn't surprise me one bit with how they played.
So for like the, we talked about the Fire Mooney Mafia haters, and a lot of them, so you know what their response will be is, yeah, great, like we're having a good year, but this is what the MO always is. We have one bad year, we have two bad years, and then we have one or two good years, and then it's all great, and then it gets this cycle. So what do they, like, in your opinion, is this year good enough on its own? And then if it is, how long do they have to sustain success? Because I think a lot of us expect them to probably even be better next year. But how long, as just being a Richmond fan, does this team need to have success for you to be like, okay, whether it's extend Mooney or even if not, just to be happy with where this team's at and turning it around?
Well, I have a different opinion on how Richmond has been over the past couple years. Regardless, I'm still going to show up to games. I'm still going to be a fan no matter what the record is. So if you're a part of the Fire Mooney Mafia, that's great. You're standing for something, but not going to the games and almost wanting failure for Chris Mooney doesn't make any sense to me at all. The whole, it's not the NBA. We're not going to get a number one draft pick if we finish last in the conference. You want to win, and we're 19-6. There is no reason to get on Mooney's back right now. It's third place in the conference, like you said, reasonable shot at the number two. So no, I really hope he shut them up for a little bit after the win against VCU.
Yeah, and I think there was fairness to them. Like, I'm not totally on one way or the other, because I go in and look at it and I, like, I can absolutely see that, you know, like, who cares if we're great for 1 year if then we have to sustain 2 to 3 years of just being non-competitive for a few years. But as you said, I think that the expectations, I don't know if it's the expectations, but you just, like, you had to look at this team last year and say Sherrod was hurt, you've got all these transfers and these guys come in, like, this team's obviously going to be better. It's college basketball. Unless you're Duke, there's going to be transitional periods. But at the same time, you know, this year isn't enough. I'm not ready to say extend Mooney yet. I'm not ready to say fire him, for God's sake, either. I think he's having a great year this year. I think he's been great in-game coaching. And I think a lot of people would agree that no one's ever really hated his in-game coaching. I think a lot of people would put him in the upper echelon of this conference in that. I think it's been more the recruiting. But Isaiah Wilson's coming in now, and we just got Andre Weir, which I think is going to be a really big signing for them. He's a guy that's a little bit under the radar, but was getting looks from Georgia, from St. John's, from St. Bonaventure. This team needs to be successful next year as well, but I think it's definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think you hit the nail on the head. And the thing is, if the people that are saying they want Mooney fired, I want them to name one person who they think is going to come in and immediately.
That's the big question, is who do you want instead? Yeah.
So I just don't quite understand that part.
Yeah. So we're looking down the rest of the, I'm going to pull up a schedule here. So you're looking down these last six games, who they got? They've got, we got George Mason on Wednesday, that's right. St. Bonaventure Saturday, GW, UMass, Davidson, Duquesne. Six games left. How reasonable, what do you expect them to go in terms of record? I think reasonably, I actually think they're going to go 6-0. But what do they have to do over these next six games to really lock them into at-large consideration? Or is it, does it not even matter even if they go 6-0? And if so, what do they have to do in Brooklyn to get themselves into the tournament?
I mean, looking at the schedule, I realistically too see them winning out. There's no reason, real reason for them not to. Even if you look at KenPom, KenPom has a 5-1, losing to Duquesne on the road.
That's, and they have it as a toss-up too. I think they've got it like 49%. So they basically have that. That's basically a pick'em game.
Yeah, so that, I thought that was kind of odd to look at. But no, this team, looking at our schedule, I don't think it could be more favorable down the stretch, especially for a chance at an at-large. Obviously, we don't have many, if any, resume builders left, like we talked about. But if we take care of business, and we've been getting a lot of help, especially over the weekend, from other teams on the bubble. NC State lost to Boston College, kind of a double whammy, because we beat Boston College, and NC State was sitting there on the bubble. So it seems like a lot of things are starting to fall into place that are going in Richmond's favor. And, no, I... losing the game down the stretch is definitely not going to be good. I feel like they do have to win out. If they don't win out, the game I can see them losing would be at St. Bonaventure, just because that's a tough environment, like we talked about before. But no, if they don't win out, they're going to have to at least make it to Saturday in Brooklyn to be considered, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. I've kind of changed my mind since the last pod. I actually think that at Duquesne is going to be a tougher game than Bonaventure. We just saw Bonaventure take a tough loss. So I don't see that being as difficult as we thought before. I just think Duquesne's style of play is a little bit more similar to St. Louis, a team that just absolutely shit pumped the Spiders in the Robin Center. And I think that Duquesne plays a similar style of basketball to that. But I still, I mean, you know, they beat Rhode Island on Rhode Island's court against Cyril Langevin, so they've certainly shown that they can go against bigger, more physical teams. But I agree. I think that, I mean, if you lose at Bonaventure or at Duquesne, especially if you lose at Duquesne and go 5-1, you're not, it doesn't take you out of that large conversation. It doesn't help, but you're still in it. But I agree. This team needs to be at least in the semifinals of the Brooklyn Brooklyn tournament, conference tournament, if they want to have any chance getting over the bubble. But I mean, at this point, they're pretty much in command in terms of with the conference. I mean, you look at it, it's Dayton, it's Rhode Island, and it's Richmond. And actually, shout out Hey 10 Podcast, PD Buckets, thanks for coming on this episode. They talked a little bit about in their pod today, guest John Giannini actually picked Richmond as the next most likeliest team to do damage in the tournament over Rhode Island. What are your thoughts on that?
I can't say I disagree. Obviously, I'm a little bit of a homer, but watching Richmond play, especially these past couple games, everything seems to be clicking. And at the time, it didn't seem like losing Francis was the end of the world. But looking at how he's come back and played now, it's like, wow, we play so much better with him in the lineup. And with him, I mean, he's seemingly 100%. I don't see anything that would show me otherwise. But if he can stay up at the rate he's playing, and we have guys like Sherrod starting to get consistent, I see no reason why Richmond can't be playing in the conference championship come Sunday in Brooklyn.
So when you talk consistent, I think there's two things that come to mind. I think first is defensively. So this team, obviously, we've talked about, I mean, number two in defensive efficiency in this conference is just astounding going into this year. If, you know, if someone had told us that at the beginning of the year, we'd say no way. You look at the last four games, they haven't let up more than 60 points. They started the year giving up 90 points in back-to-back games. Can you see, so well, first, next I want to get to shooting consistency, but first with the defense, can you see this team staying consistent defensively over these next six games? Or is there a game on that schedule where you go, I could see this being a, you know, 85-78 game?
No, I can see the consistency hanging around, especially with guys like Grant. Grant's defense has been just as exciting as his offense lately. And they're just doing a great job of just suffocating who needs to be suffocated and kind of – like Santos Silva, he shot what 6 of 11, but I feel like he could have hit a lot more. Yep. But since they're like, okay,
especially VCU's in that first 10 minutes too.
Yeah, like VCU's not hitting from deep. We can afford to have a pass inside. We'll trade you a 2 for a 3. But no, the defense, especially looking at the schedule, obviously Mason scored 87 on us in the first matchup, but we can pretty much scrap all those game notes. We didn't have Francis, and it was a different team at the time. I don't see George Mason cracking 60. But no, looking at the schedule, I wouldn't be surprised to have a team, you know, drop 75 on us just out of nowhere. But the team is definitely capable of holding opponents under 60 down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. The only game that would give me a little bit of concern is actually, I think, UMass, only because I just think matchup-wise, again, we've talked about it's the big teams that expose them. Trey Mitchell's a guy I could see, you know, having a big game against Richmond, but this supporting cast of them is just really not there. So even if he has a big game, I just don't know if, especially the way Richmond shoots the ball, because that is a home game, the way they shoot it at home. That's the only game that gave me a little concern, but it's not too troubling. So speaking of shooting, that's the other thing when I think of consistency or inconsistency is the shooting. 11 of 22 from three in this game. Nick, 5 of 7 from deep, 23 points. Why is this team so much better in the rot? Like, obviously you expect a team to be much better shooting at home, but why have they been so much better at home? And are they going to be able to sustain success, whether it's down the stretch, whether it's in the Barclays, whether it's in March Madness, with, you know, these nerves of, you know, can they shoot on a neutral site? Because against that Wisconsin game, they did not shoot the ball well. They won by 10. No. They won that game because of defense. They did not win that game because of shooting.
Yeah, no. It really is strange to see a team struggle the way they do on the road. But it would be nice to see them have at least one more solid shooting game on the road. Mm-hmm. That would not only calm fans' nerves, but more importantly, it would kind of ease the players. Like, okay, yeah, we can shoot outside of the Robin Center. So I feel like at some point it's got to just be a mental thing where it's like, man, they're obviously not sitting there thinking, oh, we're not at home, we can't shoot. But when the crowd's not with them, going against them after every missed shot, it's got to be tough. It's got to be hard. But if we can see them, especially on Saturday, even though St. Bonaventure, like you said, just got smoked by Davidson, it would be nice to have them have a solid shooting performance, because it really worried me up in Fordham, when they didn't shoot well. So I think one big road shooting game will just kind of snap this.
Yep.
And if that's the case, I can really see them making a scary run in Brooklyn.
Moving on to Twitter questions. So shout out Amelia Vogler, always coming in with the good questions. Appreciate it, helping us make some content. She asks, with the Spiders putting in a clinic versus VCU and our path to Brooklyn a little lighter than others, what's the case now for the Spiders to dance and the resurgence of a 3-bid A-10? Also, what is or are our biggest obstacles in the Spiders' path to finishing as a top 4 seed in the A-10?
Yeah, that's a great question. But I've said it for quite a while now. I think the biggest obstacle in Richmond's way is still themselves.
Agreed.
They've showed how good they can be. And like we talked about just a minute ago, their road shooting woes are reason to worry. But if they can get one more solid road shooting game before they head to Brooklyn and have a solid showing, if they win out the rest of the regular season and make it to at least, you got to make it to at least Saturday, you got to win at least one game in the tournament, I think, if they want to make it. But no, I think they control their own destiny. We talked about it earlier, they're getting a lot of help from other teams that are on the bubble, that are losing at a good time for us. So no, the biggest obstacle, in my opinion, will be ourselves. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think I talked a little bit on the radio show before Saturday's game that if you look at this team, throw out the first VCU game. If you throw that game out, has there been a loss or a game this year where you felt like they were not getting good looks, where they weren't getting shots? It doesn't, like, even that Radford loss, it didn't feel like they were getting shots. They just weren't hitting them.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I mean, it's really, I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know if it's a focus thing, because we've talked before. But, I mean, this goes back to last year's A-10 tournament. I mean, they shot the ball horribly in the Barclays Center against Fordham and St. Louis.
Yeah, no, and hopefully, you know, it's probably a small thing, but they did already play 2 games in the Barclays Center this year, but they didn't shoot well. But
yeah,
I mean, just it's maybe just a thing of comfort. They're the more they play there, the better they'll get, because obviously they shoot well at home. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And the biggest thing is, I mean, at least their defense is turning up. So if you don't hit the shots, you know, hopefully you can fall back on that defense. So Magic the Dog at Ladies Magic Dog on Twitter asks, how about a how and why the defense is clicking these past few games?
We kind of talked about, I talked about Grant earlier. He's been just kind of all over the place on defense, and he's just been in the right spots. And it's not just him, it's everybody. Francis shut down Bones Highland, and that just shows not only it's our guys, but our coaches are really putting extra emphasis on defense, which I think is really important, like we've been talking about for a while now. If they're not shooting well, they at least need to have the defense to fall back on. So I think at this point of the season, they played 25 games. They've realized, like, okay, we either shoot really, really well or we're off. So, and if we're having an off night, especially in a tournament, you got to have something to back up on. And they've been falling on the defense lately, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. So, yeah, no, everything's just been clicking. It's like they bought into a team defense, and everything just seems to be working.
Yeah, I think there's a few factors. I think, as you said, I think Grant is a massive factor. He's gone from, you know, he doesn't need to be a top-tier big man defender in this league. But, I mean, last year he was just well below average. So just having him be an average to above average is a huge plus from last year. And I think Nate's been really good on the defensive end as well. Tyler's obviously given him a boost off the bench. So I think that Grant has been a huge factor in this turnaround. I think that Tyler off the bench has been a big factor. And I also think Blake's return. I think Blake has just been fantastic. And, you know, there are times when I think that, you know, maybe he'll try to jump a screen, try to, you know, catch a pass early where he maybe gets out of position. But his quickness is just unbelievable, and his tenacity fighting through ball screens. I mean, he's one of the toughest players out there. So I think he's been huge for them. But really, I think it's been focus. I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's player leadership where it's Grant and Gilly trying to get the guys ready. But when I looked back at that VCU game, I mean, it's not like they were just – VCU was just beating them by running their sets. Like – The Spiders looked defensively unalert, unfocused, no sense of urgency. And I feel like in this stretch since then, whether it's been against George Washington or against VCU last Saturday, they've just been trying to think one step ahead every single time. And when you play the game like that, that's how you get 10 steals.
Yeah, no, 10, and then 5 by Gilliard.
I mean,
he's unreal to watch on the defensive side. So on Wednesday night, I want fans just sit there and watch Gilliard. Don't take your eyes off him for like 2 or 3 defensive possessions. And just look at how much he anticipates. It's like he just knows what's coming.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that just comes with the focus part that you were talking about.
Yeah, and I think there's some guys that will try to do that, and it kind of bites them in the butt a little bit, where you get a little too antsy and you try to anticipate and you get out of position. But his just on a consistent basis of just reading where a guy is going to go, where a pass is going to go, and you just never, ever see him get tossed out of position because of that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other guys that happens to. I would challenge all Spider fans, next time you watch this game where you said keep your eye on Gilly, that – and also, like, whether it's Gilly or you want to look at Blake, but, like, pick a player and just watch them the whole possession. Try to watch off-ball. One thing I've been trying to do a lot more in college basketball this year, watch the off-ball movement, and especially with the Spiders team, is going to be so predictive of what happens. And I can guarantee, like, there are times when, whether it's Andre going against a screen, I'm like, Andre's about to stay in front of this guy, or the way he goes under it, I know he's going to get a foul, because the guy's going to beat him dribble right, and Andre's going to come in and try to swipe for the block, and he's going to get the guy on the back for a foul. So, as Spider fans, just watch what happens, watch the off-ball movement, and I guarantee you're going to see Gilly, and you're just going to be blown away by the way this guy reads plays.
Man, he plays 40 minutes a game, and he doesn't sit still. Like he is never stagnant, which is just really amazing to watch.
Mm. So, I guess to wrap it up, we got 6 games left. This team sits 3rd in the conference. What's your prediction? Where do they finish in the A-10? Is it 2, 3, 4, 5? And does this team get in the dance?
Honestly, I see this team winning out of conference play with the one tough game being at Duquesne, just because Duquesne's 18-6, but they just snuck by Fordham. But Rhode Island at the 2, they're going to be tough to pass. We're 1.5 games back at them. But Rhode Island does still have to play Dayton. So you can almost chalk that up as a loss. I don't know. But no, I see us definitely a double bye at this point. I think that's kind of not set in stone, obviously, but there's a lot of reason to be excited to not have to play until Friday. Mm-hmm. If they can perform well in Brooklyn and win a game, get to the semifinal, even if they lose on Saturday, I really think this team has peaked and they're playing good basketball at a great time of year, especially mm-hmm. when other bubble teams are starting to kind of fall off. So if they just take care of business, it's they control their own destiny.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really fun to watch down the stretch.
I agree. I think they're going to go 6-0, and I think they're going to finish out in third, maybe second, depending on what URI does. I think the thing that I grapple with in terms of their at-large consideration is I know like they have a lot they have some better non-conference wins than honestly even Dayton does, really. When you look at that Wisconsin game and even the Rhode Island game, which is in conference, but it's just I don't know if this team has enough without running. They don't have to run the table, but at least getting in that championship game in Brooklyn or maybe going to the semifinals, having a really dominant performance. I don't know if the committee is going to give it to them. But which team most scares you for them, other than Dayton? Obviously, Dayton's kind of, you know, blows everyone away. But which team would you be most afraid for the Spiders to see in Brooklyn?
Real quick answer would be St. Louis, mm-hmm. just because of how we played against them the first game. They're a matchup nightmare for us. They're mm-hmm. just huge and just attack the boards. Mm-hmm. So that's a team that scares me. So if we can find the route to avoid them, mm-hmm. I really like our chances of playing in the championship. But looking at Rhode Island, they still have to play St. Louis and Dayton yep. in back-to-back games. So that right there could be two losses, and that yep. could really open up the window for Richmond.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think St. Louis, if you played them again, I don't think it'd be a similar result, but that, you know, that wasn't a fluke game, you know, matchup wise. That's just the way St. Louis matches up with the Spiders team, which is kind of ironic when you look back at last year when the Richmond was, you know, pretty terrible and actually went into St. Louis and won. But I think Rhode Island would scare me a little bit. I don't think that game would go the same as the first one did, because I really felt like in that first game that was, I think Chris Mooney won that game for them. I think that was a well coached game by him, and Rhode Island on the other hand didn't really adjust to what Richmond was doing. So I think that, you know, maybe if Rhode Island does decide to adjust in this next game, you know, it could be a little bit closer. But at the end of the day, I mean, honestly, St. Louis really scares me more. They just have so many dominant bigs. Besides, Rhode Island just has Sierra Langevin. I mean, even Jordan Goodwin's a guard, and he's one of the best rebounders in the conference. But I'm honestly, I probably sound super negative right now, but I'm pretty optimistic. I think this team's going to go 6-0. I think they've got a really good chance to run this tournament. Again, as I've said, you know, if Dayton, you know, they're number 5 in the country right now, maybe they want to rest Obi, you know, maybe Jalen Crutcher's, you know, a little banged up, whatever it is, they decide to rest some guys, they could lose in the semifinals, and, you know, that opens it right up, as St. Louis did last year.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree anymore.
All right, I think that's it from us. It's 5:24. I got to go do homework. It sucks. School, life. Austin's got the flu. I hurt my knee on Saturday, but it doesn't matter.
Getting old sucks.
Yep, 19, I feel like, or 20. I'm 20 now, Jesus. 20, and I feel like I'm like 85. Maybe I'm getting dementia or Alzheimer's. Who knows? All right, could be time to wrap it up. Austin, it's been good, man. I'll see you on Wednesday.
Hey, man, sounds good.
What's poppin'?
Who you
brand new whip, just hopped in. I got options. I can pass that bitch like Stockton. Just joshin'. I'm spending this holiday locked in. My body got rid of them toxins. Sports in the top 10. I can put the ball in the end zone, put a bad bitch in the friend zone. This shit sound like an intro Jet song, give me that tempo. Told Pooh he a fool with the shit. Told her don't let her friends know. In the Ville and I move like a dime. Eating fettuccine or Vincenzo's. Me and my amigos got that free smoke on the west coast. Yeah, I'm talking about pre-rolls. Dark hair bitch and she look like she go.
She do.
Hometown hero, feeling myself, can't murder my ego. She heard of my deep stroke. She said, babe, does it hurt when I deep throat?
It does.
Certified freak hoe, hang around dust and she learning my lingo. Back then, wasn't worried about me though. In the gym, trying to work on my free throw. Goddamn. Spending money at the club like Sam's. Yes, ma'am. She a little freak on cam, but she don't put this on the ground. Little boys tryna diss on the ground. Hey, I can't switch on the fam. Shit's hot, hit the switch on the fan. This where my head is. I feel resentment from every direction. Even some homies be wearing expressions. I be discouraged from sharing my blessings. We used to share a connection. Now it just feels like it's wearing and stretching. I'm getting real sick of taking advice from people that never could stare at reflections. Somewhere in there is a lesson. Y'all ain't evolving, it's very depressing. I'm at the club with the basketball team. Me and the Cardinals are sharing a section. Gotta cherish the present. I'm drinking water and wearing protection. Got a career and I'm very invested. Some people call it a scary obsession.
I like to call it a passion. I can't be sitting relaxing. PG, we getting some traction. I'm at the venue, it's packed in. I'm digging her accent. I got a BB Simon belt on me, and she trying to get it unfastened. That's my type of distraction. That's my type of she Latin. Got my own flow, and I'm about to get a patent. Brand new sheets for the bed they satin. Y'all wasn't tuned in back then. My swag, they keep jacking. I ain't doing no verse, quit asking. What's poppin'? Brand new whip, just hopped in. I got options, I can pass that bitch like Stockton. Just joshin', I'ma spend this holiday locked in. My body got rid of them toxins. Sports in the top 10.